A blue sign hurtles through space toward a green planet. Turner. Now a logo of a thickly maned lion framed by a ring of film. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Titles appear. Clark Gable and Ava Gardner in Mogambo. Copyright 1953. Produced by Lowe's Incorporated. This film has been described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Lisa Benjamin. Read by Wendy Sacchichini. Funded by the U.S. Department of Education. More titles. Also starring Grace Kelly, Donald Sinden, Philip Stainton, Eric Pullman, Lawrence Naismith, and Dennis O'Day. And featuring the Samburu tribe of the Kenya colony, the Wagania tribe of the Belgian Congo, the Bahia tribe of Tanganyika, and the Mbedi tribe of French Equatorial Africa. Screenplay by John Lee Mahan, based on a play by Wilson Collison, produced by Sam Zimbalist, directed by John Ford. A note appears. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer is grateful beyond measure to the government officials of Kenya Colony, Tanganyika, the Uganda Protectorate, and the Republic of French Equatorial Africa, whose limitless cooperation made this motion picture possible. At dawn, a lone tribesman stands on a riverbank. He clutches a spear as the sky, tinged with orange and gold, canopies above. Later, a bare-chested native marches through a campsite. Taking measured steps, he repeatedly raises and lowers his arms. Sweat covers his dark skin. A chocolate-colored fez sits atop his bald head. He struts past a tent as a heavy-set white man emerges. Puffing on a pipe, the white man shrugs on a shirt and places a monocle over his right eye. Another native quickly approaches. The white man dashes to a different tent.
Lady, our luck's in.
Huh? Black leopard, lady.
Black leopard nosing the kill.
His mustached friend rushes out of the tent.
Get the jeep, Robbie. Yes.
The mustached Victor Marswell runs into a third tent where another man sleeps. Marswell finds a nearly empty bottle of liquor on a nightstand and smashes it. The sleeping man stirs.
Come on your feet, let's go.
The pudgy Bolchek staggers after him. Marswell rips a tarp off a jeep and hops behind the wheel. His heavyset friend, John Brown Price, climbs in beside him. Bolchek gets into a flatbed truck where natives wait with a bamboo cage. The party drives off, heading for the woods. Now a dark leopard creeps near the edge of the forest, almost hidden among the trees. Nearby, a mottled goat stands in a clearing, trapped in a small makeshift teepee. The leopard emerges from the woods and stalks toward it. The goat desperately paws at the straw-covered ground. The hunters, led by Marswell, step through knee-high grass toward the animals. The white men carry rifles, the native spears. With fangs bared, the leopard glances from left to right, then inches toward the goat. Glossy black fur covers the leopard's body. It has small, rounded ears and wide eyes. As it steps onto a heavy patch of straw, the ground suddenly gives way and the leopard plunges into a pit. Caught in a net, it dangles inches from the bottom of the pit. Moments later, the men lift the net.
Don't let him twist that net.
Bolchek does, his arms straining with the effort as the leopard struggles to get free. Brown Price worriedly looks on.
Teach it. Come on, get around there, Bolchek. Get a move on, man.
Big time, Betty's a big one.
Yeah, young, too.
The leopard pokes through the net and bites Bolchek's finger. He pulls out a whip and starts to beat it.
Bolchek, stop that!
The animal breaks loose and bolts toward the woods. The natives quickly flee. Marswell marches over to Bolchek and socks him in the jaw. The bald, pudgy man topples to the ground. As Marswell and Brown Price stride off, he slowly sits up. Later, Marswell drives the Jeep with Brown Price at his side. As they pull up to a clearing and park, several workers rush over and surround the vehicle. Marswell hops out. Brown Price turns toward the natives. Brown Price points to the large cabin nearby as Marswell climbs onto its porch. Striding toward the entrance, Marswell spots several pieces of luggage and a steamer trunk. He knots his brow and places his fists on his hips. Brown Price watches from the Jeep and smiles mischievously. At the cabin, Marswell steps through the entrance to a patio. Another trunk stands open, with a silk robe resting on top. Marswell picks it up, tosses it back, and turns away, then glances back. Picking it up again, he steps over more luggage into a bedroom. Inside, he finds a brassiere resting on a chair. He lifts it with one finger and examines it. With a smirk, he drops it, then strides to a back porch, where a woman showers behind a tall wooden fence.
Who's there, Bunny?
Bunny? No, this is not Bunny.
As he steps closer, she starts to dry herself.
Who are you?
May I ask who you are, why you're here, and what in blue blazes is going on?
Well, her name is Kelly, Eloise Kelly. Better known in the gay capitals of the earth as Honey Bear Kelly. And the first thing that's going on is my robe. And your arm there, if you'll be so cooperative.
With pleasure, Miss Kelly.
Stop. Throw.
He does. She catches it.
Turn around. No kidding. Find Bunny and tell him I'm here, will you?
I'd be glad to if you tell me who Bunny is and where I find him.
The Maharaja Bunganaw. Didn't he tell you I was coming?
As she steps out in her robe, he eyes her shapely figure.
So you came down to visit with a Maharaja, huh?
Sure. All the way from New York. You know, I think it's a pretty dirty trick he wasn't on hand to meet me when I came. Didn't he tell you?
No. The Maharaja is in India. He left here a week ago.
He didn't.
Yes, he did. It seems that someone's trying to take away some of his palaces. So he gave up the safari and went back to see what he could do about it.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
Well, didn't he say anything about me? Didn't he tell you I was coming or anything?
No, he didn't.
Well, just between you and me, I think Bunny's turned out to be a big heel.
He didn't even leave you a return ticket.
Look, Mr. Whoever you are, let me jump to my own conclusions, huh? Ooh, of all the rotten, subversive tricks. Flying all the way thousands of miles to this lousy place. Arriving here hot and tired as a Sixth Avenue mink, and that water's even hotter, and that soap gives out with about as much lather as blue cheese.
Look, I am the man that owns this building, and the shower, and the soap.
Well, I wouldn't
this
be so proud of it.
This happens to be my home, be it ever so humble.
Well, I had to have some place to go. Couldn't get a word out of the laughing boy over there with the sleigh bells in his ears.
Untada!
Marswell scowls at a nearby native.
Ooh, of all that dirt.
Calling out the Maharaja long distance isn't going to do any good. And if you'll pardon my subtlety, I'm not so sure I'd want you on safari in the first place. You know, I run a business here. I'm working these men, and they have to keep their mind on their work. And...
Look, Buster, don't you get overstimulated with me. I'm the little gal that flew all the way from New York to this lousy place, this dark continent. Only I expected to find a man with a flashlight.
Look, I'd suggest that you use up some of that energy in getting your clothes on. I'll assign you to a room at the other end.
Hey, wait a minute. Look, look. Can't you get me a canoe or a truck or a pair of roller skates? Anything to get out of
Trucks
here.
Trucks couldn't get through this country even if I could spare one. So you're stuck with our company until next week's boat.
You mean there's no way to get out?
No! Now, weren't you going to do something about getting dressed?
Ooh. Boy. This'll be the gayest week of the season.
Later in a holding pen, Marswell and Brown Price tend to a giraffe. They crouch beside the animal as it lies on the ground.
Plenty deep, all right. I thought I told you to replace that barbed wire.
We went out to Black Leopard, remember, Laddie?
Marswell frowns.
Sorry, Brownie.
Rising, he jerks on a rope tied to the giraffe's foot to help it stand. The stilt-legged creature walks off. Nearby, Kelly approaches a smaller giraffe and pets its nose.
Hi, girl. Hello. How are you, girl? Come here.
Nearby, Marswell and Brownie approach Bolchak.
All right, let's get on with the feeding, Bolchak.
What do you think I'm doing now, huh?
Big.
Vic, you're getting too unstrung for your own good. Why don't you fly out to Nairobi or even up to Cairo for a week or two? You know, you haven't been out of here for just on a year.
I'd like to, Brownie. But Dorgenbeck's yelling for those two white hippo. And I'm going to pick that cat up again if I have to run him all the way to the Congo.
I know. But you need relaxation. And the little trinket that's dropped from the Maharaja's turban. It's a spry little bit.
That's playgirl stuff, Brownie. I've seen them in London, Paris, Rome. They start life in a New York nightclub and end up covering the world like a paint advertisement. Not an honest feeling from her kneecap to her neck.
Getting rather meticulous, aren't you?
Maybe. Maybe it's about time.
Kelly curiously watches them from a distance. Turning away, she approaches a cage. She reaches through the bars, then suddenly jumps back. A spotted leopard stands inside. Kelly goes over to a smaller cage and kneels beside it. A baby leopard paws at her.
Everything snarls around this joint.
She goes to a lion's cage.
Hi. How are you, boy? Oh, now you're a nice guy.
A chimp stands in another cage.
Hi, fellas. Hi, boy.
As she finds a banana and peels it, a nearby baboon reaches toward her. She feeds it to the chimp. The baboon covers its head with burlap. Marswell comes up behind her.
Hi, boy. Hey, want you some gum?
Hey, Kelly, get away from that chimp and stop feeding him bubble gum.
Can anybody be friendly with me around this
friendly?
Place?
That chimp? He'd bite your finger off just for fun.
But he was only a...
All right, it's your lookout. His teeth are poison. Once they sink into you, you'll blow up like a... like an eggplant.
Hey, look, all the other animals around here are being fed. May I ask what time we get ours? You may not hear it among the other noises, but I'm beginning to rumble.
We dine at 9.
How continental.
Grinning, Kelly rushes over to a baby elephant.
Oh, come here, darling.
She playfully twirls her hands around the animal's trunk.
Come on.
Nighttime. Kelly enters the cabin's main room where the hunters sit at a table. Brownie and Bolchek rise. Marswell remains in his seat. He wears a change of clothes.
Miss Kelly, Mr. Brown Price, Mr. Bolchek.
How do you do?
She settles into her chair.
Well, Mr. Marswell, you look a lot better. I bet you even smell better. Let's hope that your temper's the equivalent, huh?
It's on an even keel, Kelly. Probably improve with food.
Oh, now that's my nice, healthy boy.
He frowns at her.
Look, the Norders are coming out by next week's boat instead of the following.
Well, good. That means we can get rid of him 1 week earlier. I'm handing him over to you, Bolchek.
Relatives, I take it.
No, customers. He's an anthropologist. He's going on safari.
You'll have to excuse me, but I left my cap and gown at the cleaners.
Anthropologist. He studies man's development. Looks for skulls. Examines heads and all that.
Examines heads? Should have met him before I left New York. He could have examined both mine.
Bolchek opens his full mouth.
Well, let's not get sick over it, Miss Dan Mann. It's not that funny.
Oh, you're so good, Miss Kelly.
Well, it ends that, doesn't it? No kidding, I've never met scientific types. I'd like to meet them. I might even learn something.
I don't think you'll be seeing too much of them. You'll be wanting to come back on the same boat.
Okay, Coach. Take me out. I'm through.
Wapi Buntara.
The men all rise and rush out.
Hey.
Kelly quickly follows.
Hey, wait a minute!
They climb into the jeep and truck and start to pull off. Kelly leaps onto the flatbed. Later, they stand over an animal trap. Workers tug on ropes attached to pulleys to lift a catch out of the pit. Kelly stands up in the jeep watching. She swivels her hips to the music. Marswell jerks his head toward her in surprise. She puts her hand to her hip and smiles at him. At the pit, the workmen haul a baby rhino out of the ground. It has wrinkled gray skin and a sharp horn protruding from its snout.
Hey, a kangaroo.
Marswell shoots a look at her. Later, he sits at a table cleaning his rifle. Ruggedly handsome, he has bronzed skin, graying temples, and an athletic build. Kelly enters dressed in a nightgown and robe.
I'm sorry, I just can't sleep with that lion or whatever it is chirping out there. Do you mind if I stay with you for a while?
No, have a seat.
You sure I won't bother you?
No, not at all. New batch of magazines came in today.
Oh, good.
She picks one up.
What makes him do that? Is he hungry?
Mm-mm. Probably a lioness lurking in the bush out there somewhere.
I guess there's all sorts of hunger in the world, isn't there?
Mm.
This is a weird sort of business to be in, collecting animals. I guess it's fun for a man, isn't it?
When it's profitable.
You sell them to zoos?
Mm. Circuses, trainers.
How much do you get for, for a baby elephant, for instance?
A Dumbo?
Is that really the name for them?
Mm. All around 5,000. Tough to ship, though.
You know, I saw a baby elephant in the zoo once. He was sucking on a gallon jug of milk with a nipple attached. Can you imagine that, a whole gallon of milk?
Well, their mothers carry much more than that.
More than a gallon?
Mm.
Oh, boy. Oh, I know. Have you got any kangaroos? What do you get for a kangaroo?
You have to go to Australia for kangaroos.
Oh, yes. Well, like I said, I was educated at the York Club. I'd like to see a kangaroo close up. A mama kangaroo. Is it true that they carry their babies in a little sort of pouch thing?
That's right. All marsupials do that.
My what?
Animals that carry their young, you know, like a papoose in reverse.
Oh, isn't that the darndest thing? Everything with a zipper, huh?
Kelly, you're all right. How about a drink?
Oh, I love one.
Sorry about no ice.
Oh, it's all right. Doctor says it's bad for your pouch anyway.
Soda or water?
Water. You know, I find always that with water...
Her eyes widen as she spots a slithering snake across the room. She grabs onto Marswell.
What's the matter?
Well, do something!
Well, that's just old Joe.
Old Joe?
Yes, he's our migratory mousetrap. I bet there isn't a rat or a mouse within 100 yards of this place.
Oh, boy. I think I haven't even had my first drink yet.
She rests against him.
I really have old Joe around to trap young girls into where you are right now.
Oh, no, Mr. Marswell. I don't imagine you need old Joe for that.
She takes a drink from him and turns away. Stepping onto the porch, she wraps her robe tightly around her hourglass figure. Moonlight shines on her fine-featured face. Kelly has green cat-like eyes and a cleft in her chin. Her thick brunette hair is short and wavy. Marswell steps up beside her as she eyes a nearby river winding into the distance.
The river looks awfully pretty in the moonlight, doesn't it?
His expression softens as he looks her up and down. Marswell flings his cigarette away, spins her around, and passionately kisses her. They tremble slightly as he pulls his lips from hers.
Now, wait a minute, Marswell. You're turning into the original African hot rod.
I can always quit, Kelly.
You can be nice and sweet when you want to, can't you?
How do you know? Maybe you spoke too soon.
He gently kisses her again.
I'm warning you. I'm searching. I'm looking, really I am.
I'll look with you for a little while.
If a body meet a body coming through the round.
Several days later, Kelly sits at a player piano, her feet working the pedals.
Meet a body cry. And all the boys, they smile at me.
Still pounding away at that old role?
Hi, Ronnie. Oh, it's the only piece of jazz I've been able to find around this place.
It's been played more in the last week than the last 30 years.
No kidding, Ronnie. Have you been out here that long?
Oh, I came out here for my health.
He pats his ample belly.
I found it. I'm still here.
Where'd you get that scar, Ronnie?
Old buffalo charged. First barrel misfired, and we danced around a bit.
Well, that's one way to die, isn't it? Dancing.
Oh, I don't know. Where did you get yours?
What?
Your scars.
Oh.
You've got them, though they're not visible. Sorry. I'm a nosy old idiot, my dear.
You're pretty smart, Brownie. Nice, gentle smart, though. Someday when I know you better, I'll tell you all about it, Brownie.
Montana, that is evil.
Well, listen to old Trader Horn out there. Attaboy, chop chop, quartermaster.
All packed, Kelly?
My, we're busy as... packed.
The boat will be here in 10 minutes. Moontal will take your luggage down to the dock. Animals ready for loading, Brownie?
With a look to Brownie, Kelly rushes out.
Yes.
Brownie stomps off in the other direction. On the porch, a corridor runs the length of the house. In the middle of the hallway, Kelly slumps against the door to her bedroom. She wearily opens it up and steps inside. Opening a desk drawer, she takes out a handkerchief. Kelly wipes her nose, then flings it down. She turns to a closet and starts ripping out clothes, pulling them onto the bed. She grabs a parasol and slings it beside a trunk. Later, natives stand on a wooden dock eyeing a steamship's approach. Women and children, wrapped in printed cloth, squat on the ground nearby. A smiling toddler waves. In the holding pen, Kelly strolls past another child.
Hi, sweetie.
She approaches the baby elephant's pen.
Hello, baby. Come here and say goodbye to your mommy. Your mommy's going home.
She feeds him.
Now you'll be a good little boy. Wash behind your ears every day. And eat all your nice raw potatoes so you'll grow up to be a big, fat elephant. And then step on your Uncle Victor's corns every day.
A workman comes up.
What boat? What boat? What boat?
Oh, the boat!
What boat?
As they dash off, the elephant tries to climb between the bars of the pen. At the cabin, workers carry out Kelly's luggage. She saunters behind them, swinging her parasol. Brownie approaches.
Package aboard, my dear.
Thank you, Brownie. You've been very sweet.
You're a nice girl, Miss Kelly.
No, I get it, Brownie. He's running a business, and I'm a bottleneck.
Sometimes a man can't see the one tree because of the forest.
And someday he's going to bump into the wrong kind of tree and get his nose busted. Take care of yourself, Brownie, and him too.
She ambles off. At the river's edge, the steamship chugs up to the pier. A grizzled skipper turns to an attractive, fresh-faced couple.
Here we are.
The young man snaps a photo as the young woman beams beside him. Both wear pith helmets. On the bank, Kelly sits on one of her suitcases as Marswell approaches. He removes his hat, then leans against another case, drawing closer to her.
Kelly, I wish you could stick around for a while, but I'll be busy.
Don't spell it out for me. No, my little white hunter, it's high time I was on my way anyhow.
It's been nice having you here, and,
Yes, it's certainly been something I didn't expect.
Look, when the rainy season starts, I might fly up to Paris. If you happen to be there, we, might run into each other again.
Might.
She coolly regards him. Marswell dons his fedora.
Well, take it easy, Kelly. Drop me a line.
Patting her leg, he strides off.
Hello, Vic. Hello, Brownie.
Hello, John.
I have the happiness to present Mr. Norley.
Mr. Marswell?
Yes.
How do you do? We finally made it.
Mr. Norley, Mr. Brown Price.
How are you?
And Mrs. Norley.
Linda, darling?
Her husband helps her down the gangplank.
Mrs. Norley?
Norley?
How do you do?
Mr. Brown Price. Welcome.
Oh, it's so exciting and thrilling. Finally,
Brownie,
all right.
Take him up the house, will you? Montana. This way, please.
Brownie hands Marswell his mail, then leads the couple toward the house. As they walk past Kelly, the two women exchange a look. Linda Nordley glances away, tugging the strap of her purse onto her shoulder. Beautiful and fair-skinned, she has a slim figure. Kelly watches them go for a moment, climbs down from her pile of luggage, and sashays to the pier.
Hey, kid. You get money for your plane fare?
Yeah.
He takes out a wad of bills.
Oh, now, wait a minute.
I'll brain you if you don't take it. I'll call it a 99-year loan.
This is one loan I'll pay back if I have to live 99 years to do it.
She takes the cash, then saunters up the gangplank onto the boat. Workers remove the plank.
Hold you, Matt. Go in, Billy.
The skipper steps behind the wheel. A collection of animals stands in cages through the ship. A giant giraffe bows its head. A large-eyed ostrich peeks out. Kelly stands beside a pacing leopard. On the bank, Marswell watches the boat pull off. A column of smoke puffs out of its stack. Marswell turns away, heading back to the cabin. Kelly follows him with her eyes while twirling her peach parasol. She turns to the leopard.
Well, here we go. Bronx Zoo next.
She starts to pace. The black-spotted leopard matches her movements. She stops and looks to the bank. At the wheel, the undershirted skipper takes a swig from a bottle of alcohol. Now, in the cabin, Marswell enters to find Brownie having tea with the Nordleys.
Well, everything all right? Good trip?
This is charming. Everything's so neat and clean. I'll be unbearably frank and say I didn't expect this.
Well, I'll be frank and say that you're a big surprise to me, too.
In what way?
Well, the wife of the last scientist who was here weighed about 180 pounds of pure muscle, got a good start on a mustache, and every time she spoke to her husband, every lion in the territory took off. He was a little man with a beard. He was an authority on some kind of a flea.
Well, I sincerely hope I've disappointed you.
Come on, I'll show you your room.
They set down their teacups and saucers and follow him down the corridor.
Juma. Diary. This is Juma. He's your personal maid. Anything you want to ask him. You won't understand him, but he will you.
They enter a room with a double bed.
Isn't this nice?
Now, about the bed, I didn't know. So if you want twin beds, I'll have them.
Oh, no, no, no.
Oh, no, no, no.
All right.
Everything's most satisfactory.
I've got the beastliest ringing in my ears.
Come down, darling. It must be those shots we took. The doctor said they sometimes cause a reaction.
What shots?
Yesterday at the settlement, the tetsifly injections.
Tetsifly? Your letter didn't say anything about going up into the tetsifly country.
Well, you see, Mr. Marsden,
we understood we had to go through that territory to get to the gorillas.
Not necessarily. And why gorillas?
It's a pet theory of mine. I want to study gorillas, their family life and so on. Even get some of their vocal sounds on a tape recorder I brought with me. It's a theory on the derivative evolution.
Sorry, I wouldn't understand. And again, to be quite frank, it's a long and difficult safari. And it doesn't fit in with my schedule.
Oh, but there must be
some way. If I'd known about this, I wouldn't have taken a job.
But why?
You can't promise anything with gorillas but trouble. Some people have worked as much as 10 months and never even got a glimpse of one. Besides, I have my other work to attend to.
Donald's perfectly willing to pay.
I'm sorry. We'll have to stand by the original agreement. Now, I'm going to hand you over to one of my assistants, Mr. Leon Balchak. Perfectly capable.
But I want to work with you, Marswell.
Yes, after all, Mr. Marswell, Mr. Nordley made his arrangements with you.
He made them with my company. My organization, Mrs. Nordley.
Nordley wipes his brow.
You all right?
I think perhaps a glass of water.
Chuba pours one for him. Nordley starts to drink it, then becomes faint and passes out on the bed.
Oh, really? Donald, darling.
Now, don't get excited.
What's the matter with him?
Excessive reaction to the tetsifly shot, that's all. Be out of his head for a day or two. We'll snap him out of it. I got a couple of tablets. Don't let him throw this blanket off.
No.
And the shoes.
He covers Nordley up to his neck and steps out. Moments later, Marswell approaches Brownie with a box of medical supplies.
Our young scientist just went to his knees. Out cold. Tetsifly shot.
That's too bad.
Mr. Marswell, he's trembling and shaking and getting nauseated. We've got to get him on the boat and back to a doctor.
Moving him now would only aggravate his condition. He's running a very high fever and we have to break it up, that's all.
Haven't you a thermometer? How do we know?
One. Fever's fever.
But
Linda pushes past them to the natives who are bringing luggage into the house.
Just a minute, please, will you?
She takes a valise from one, opens it, and removes a medicine bottle.
Would one of these be...
Bolchek calls in a native.
A lion chewed him up. This place is turning into a hospital.
Marswell and Brownie kneel beside the injured man. He quivers as Marswell pours iodine over his wound, then pats it dry. Linda looks on, her mouth a tight line.
Strap him up, Ronnie, will you?
Would one of these be the right thing? Donald knows all about them, but I...
I'm sorry, Mrs. Norley. Out here, we have three antidotes for everything.
He shows her his supplies.
Quinine, iodine, and castor oil. Quinine should fix him up very nicely. I don't think he needs any of the other two, do you?
At certain times, jokes are in very poor taste, Mr. Molesworth.
Oh, come on, Mrs. Norley. No reason to lose your temper.
He heads back to their room. She follows. In the bedroom, Nordley lies with a cloth over his brow. Standing over him, Marswell takes two pills out of a bottle.
Please hurry.
He shoots Linda a look, then stuffs the pills down Nordley's throat. The young anthropologist bites him in the process.
There you are. He'll start to sweat in a half an hour or so. Keep him well covered up. I'll be back from time to time. He's strong enough, all right. Gonna bite like a young croc.
He leaves. She rushes after him.
Mr. Marswell, just a minute. Is that all you're going to do for him?
What do you expect me to do, Mrs. Norley? Crawl in bed with him and hold his hand?
She slaps him. Turning away, she shamefully covers her face.
Keep him well covered up and get all the water down him you can. Will you do that? Will you do what I said?
Yes.
As she trembles, he gently wraps his arm around her.
And give him one of those pills every 4 hours.
She nods.
Good night.
Later, Brownie and Bolchek play cards in the main room while Marswell stands nearby. Linda dashes in.
Mr. Marswell. Oh, no, please sit still. It's time for his pill, but he's sleeping so well, I didn't want to wake him.
Oh, well, I'll have a look.
He follows her out. Linda wears a long dressing gown tied at the neck. Bolchek stares after them.
Bolchek, play cards.
In Nordley's room, Marswell checks his pulse. As he steps back, Linda drapes mosquito netting over the bed.
Much better. I'll let him sleep.
Mr. Marswell.
She follows him to the doorway.
I'd like to apologize about this morning. I'm terribly ashamed.
He warmly regards her.
I had it coming. You know, you pack a good wallop.
Oh, please. It was very shabby behavior.
He locks onto her blue-eyed gaze for a moment, then glances down at the bedroom floor.
Comfortable on that.
Oh, yes, thank you. It was most thoughtful of you.
They step out onto the porch corridor.
What on earth are those horrible sounds? Animal of some kind?
Yes. They're hippos fighting.
Marswell goes back into her room, brings out a pair of binoculars and holds them out. Linda takes them and stares through the lenses. In the nearby river, two hippos grapple. They stretch open their massive mouths and bare broad pink tongues and stubby fangs. They have rounded humps covered with wrinkled gray hides. Linda lowers the binoculars and furrows her brow.
Why are they fighting?
Probably over a female.
She jerks her head toward him, then gives back the binoculars.
Thank you very much for everything.
I'll put it on the bill. Room is the last one on the porch corridor, in case he needs anything during the night.
Thank you again.
Good night.
Good night.
He slowly turns away. In the main room, Marswell finds Bolchek and Brownie still playing.
Nordley come out of it yet?
Yes. They're both feeling much better.
He knocks Bolchek's foot off a small table, then sits before it.
Two pretty girls in 1 week.
Marswell throws him a look, then coolly lights a cigarette. Brownie smiles at the cards in his hand.
Kelly. I'm going to miss Kelly. Kelly was all right with me.
I didn't say she wasn't, did I?
Outside, Kelly clambers up a ladder. The skipper stands in a rowboat below her.
Miss, going up them stairs.
Nip
Which one?
The little one.
The little one?
Yeah, come on.
Reaching a walkway, she bends over the side to take a bag.
Now hold on, and I'll get the others up to you. What?
Oh, I've got all the ones more.
You want that? Leave it for Maswell. All right, I got him now. I'm coming up.
Okay.
He climbs up after her.
You women in your bags.
Moments later.
Hi there. Anybody up on the old homestead? Hi, Maswell. The return of Frankenstein.
What happened?
Shipwrecked. And me without a desert island to my name.
A catastrophe, Mr. M. A bleeding belly full of bad luck.
Oh, he's stinking.
How come? Where?
About 3 miles down the river, the engine packs up. Then the current got hold of us and drifted us onto a mud bar.
What about the cages? The animals all right?
Yes, they're all right. We left the crew to look after them, and me and Miss Kay come here in the tender.
Tender? I'll say it was. Hi, Brownie. And in the dark, too. Any minute I expected to be up to me hips and hippopotamuses. Oh, you got me doing it now.
Could you send a couple of your boys down to the settlement with the news?
Balchak, go get Moon Tyler.
As he leaves, the skipper goes over to a makeshift bar. Kelly smirks.
Have a drink.
Thank you, miss.
How long will it take for repairs?
Oh, no time at all. Maybe a day after we get the replacement. Mind you, it'll take us about 3 or 4 weeks to get them up.
4 weeks? Rami, take you.
Come on, Jeff. Time for your nap.
Leon will bring the boys around for a chat, and then they'll shove off in the morning. Take the bottle with you.
Thank you, Mr. M. Yeah, Ronnie!
Marswell scowls after him, then turns to Kelly.
I'm sorry.
She rises, picking up her shoes, parasol, and one suitcase, then starts out.
Just a minute, Kelly. Mr. and Mrs. Nordley are in that room, and I'll have Bolchak move in with Brownie. You can take his room. He'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Oh, yeah, the scientific characters. They look kind of shiny, new, and young to be scientific types, don't they?
Yeah, but take it easy, will you?
What do you mean?
Well, you know, Mrs. Nordley has led a sheltered sort of a life, I guess, and, let's not get too informal. You know what I mean.
I know what you mean. And you got about as much gallantry in that remark as you think I've got brains.
Oh, now, wait a minute,
Kelly. Oh, never mind, Maswell. I'll just act like I was your sister, down from Vassar for the holidays.
Hmm? Well, that was pretty lame talk. Well, you know what I'm talking about.
It's possible that I have a slight inkling as to your outlook on life.
As she struts out, he studies her swaying hips. Entering her new bedroom, Kelly throws down her things, then plops onto the bed.
Oh, Joe, get off my bed. Scram!
She shakes the covers, knocking the snake off. Reaching for a nearby bottle, she starts to throw it, but stops and takes a swig instead.
Oof.
She dumps it. Daytime. Kelly strolls through the holding pen.
Hi, baby. Come on, Elena.
Gripping bananas, she enters the elephant's pen. He comes over with a baby rhino and tries to grab the fruit.
Hey, listen, save some for the little girl. Oh! Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Here.
The baby elephant hungrily paws at her with his trunk. Stepping around him, she struggles to feed the rhino.
Oh, you're a nice little girl.
Oops!
The elephant wraps his trunk around her arm. Kelly slips into a muddy hole and drops to the ground.
Hey, wait a minute. Oh, you're such a pig, you don't deserve any more.
No.
Now, if you're not such a pig, I'll feed you.
No.
She gives him a few of the small bananas, then feeds the rhino.
Girl.
Stepping backward, she inches toward the hole.
Come on. No.
She slips and falls again. Later on the porch.
Oh, hi.
How do you do?
My name is Mrs. Nordley. I'm Kelly, Eloise Kelly. I hear your husband isn't feeling too well. Is he better?
Oh, he's much, much better, thank you.
Oh, that's good.
Mr. Maswell says he's made a very quick recovery.
Speaking of friend Maswell, I wonder where he is. Probably out lassoing some ferocious gazelle or something.
But he took the captain back to the boat in a truck. Something about bringing back the animals, I believe.
Oh, boy, I wish I'd had a truck last night. I haven't walked that far since some palpitating halfback tried to tell me he'd run out of gas.
You've been here on some sort of safari?
Well, I was going on one, or at least I thought I was. I came down to visit an old pal of mine, the Maharaja Bunganore. Do you mind?
She takes one of Linda's sandwiches.
But the big, thoughtless cad stood me up.
He stood you?
Oh, yes, in Americanese, that means that when I got here, he wasn't here.
Oh.
Oh, men can get you into all sorts of trouble, can't they?
That was quite a shame.
When Moswell first heard about it, he was furious. But then he calmed down and he was kind of sweet about it. He's kind of cute, I guess. He's a pretty rough, mean man at times. I must get your husband to examine his head, see what's inside. Oh, I hope the saga of my lonely travels hasn't shocked you.
Oh, no.
I suppose the girls are a little more conservative up your way, aren't they?
Well, with my husband almost well again, I had it in mind to take a little walk, sort of get one's bearings.
Mm-hmm. Nice day for it.
Well, so be it.
Kelly stares after her. Stepping up to the blind, she parts them to get a better look at the retreating figure. Linda stands near the cabin, surveys the area, then starts off on her walk. Kelly watches as Mrs. Nordley heads past the pier. Later, Linda strolls alone through knee-high grass. The river sits in the distance, winding along the edge of a forest. Linda removes a scarf from her head and eyes birds perched in a leafless tree above. They have long, curving beaks, white heads, and dark plumage. A little later, Linda ambles through the woods. A distant gathering of birds nests in a flat-crowned tree. She gazes all around, her eyes wide and shining with wonder. Back in the cabin, Marswell steps onto the porch, dressed in khaki shorts that show off his muscular legs.
Well, bless your big, bony knees.
He glances down at them, then up at her.
Hi, Kelly.
They step into the main room.
You're up early.
Oh, you know me, the neurotic type, insomnia. Hey, why didn't you tell a fella? She's something. She's the kind that makes me want to break out of jail.
He stares at her open-mouthed.
You been talking to Mrs. Nordley?
Well, now look at him. Knew to whom I was referring right away.
Yeah, me and my crystal ball.
You and your crystal head. And wipe that Emily Post look off your face. I didn't endanger your lily white reputation. I simply said she's pretty.
So she's pretty. What the blue blazes has that to do with the price of pork?
And she's very nice, too.
Certainly she's nice.
So she's nice. I said it first, didn't I?
Well, who cares who said it first?
Well, it might make her a little nicer if I said it
first. All right, so you said it first. I better look in on him.
Mr. Nordley is peacefully pounding his ear. And not that you're interested, but Mrs. Nordley has gone for a walk.
Gone for a walk? Where?
Well, how should I know?
He grabs a rifle.
How do you like that? Why did you try to stop her?
Well, I'm sorry. I had no idea.
Brownie,
I couldn't go for a walk around.
How do you like that? Mrs. Nordley walks off in the bush like it was Hyde Park. Take the Jeep and go around by the forest trail. I'll take the river road.
As he marches off, Brownie turns toward the Jeep. Kelly walks up to the porch railing, her face tense. Now Marswell strides along the grassy riverbank. In another part of the bush, Linda continues to stroll aimlessly. A white-crowned eagle rests atop a plant. She studies it for a moment, then continues down the path. Marswell enters the woods, still gripping his gun. In a clearing of tall grass, Linda spots two warthogs butting heads. She fearfully rushes off. In another part of the woods, Marswell cups his hand around his mouth.
This is Nordley!
He walks on. Linda comes upon a lion about a dozen yards away, dragging an antelope by its head. The predator sets down its prey. Linda's eyes grow wide with fear. She ducks under a low-hanging tree limb and dashes off. She stumbles into a thicket of shrubs. Breaking into a run, she drops through the ground. She lands in one of Marswell's pits. It's about 7 feet deep. Above, a black leopard creeps along a tree limb, heading toward her. Nearby, Marswell cocks his rifle. As the leopard steps closer, Linda cowers in a pit.
Linda! Don't move!
He aims. The leopard shudders and falls out of the tree. Marswell sprints over to the pit. Kneeling, he reaches into the hole and pulls Linda out. She eyes him nervously for a moment, then brushes off her clothes. Spotting the leopard's body, she takes a step back. Linda glances up at the heavens.
Well, that's that. Come on, let's go back to camp.
Oh, I'm...
Let's go.
They start back.
Well, I've certainly won myself the reputation for being an utter fool.
I'm not so much worried about your reputation as your health. If anything should happen to you, it's my reputation that would suffer.
Doesn't a woman's reputation mean anything to you?
Only if I'm personally interested.
Not very gracious, but understandable. Donald will think I'm dreaming when I tell him all this. Thank heavens you're a witness.
Do you need one?
Donald's one husband who's believed everything I've told him since I was 5 years old.
5 years old? You were married rather young, weren't you?
Well, actually, we were married when I was 20.
How long ago was that? Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, it's all right. I'm 27. Satisfied?
You want me to forget it?
Not necessarily. Have you ever been married, Mr. Marlsworth?
No, I've never had the good fortune to find a lady who was interested.
That could be the remark of a cynical man.
What have I to be cynical about? I make my contribution to this mixed-up community they call the world. What else is there?
That could be the remark of a lonely man.
Could be.
She pauses beside an ivy-covered tree and leans against it. Marswell keenly regards her. Linda blushes in his gaze and bows her head. He glances around.
Looks like we're in for a little storm. Let's get back to camp. Come on.
He ducks beneath a branch and starts through the forest. She quickly follows. Later, they walk hand in hand along the riverbank. Linda wears her scarf around her golden-colored hair. A strong wind whips her skirt and shakes nearby branches. In the holding pen, giraffes head for shelter. Linda begins to stagger. Marswell slings the strap of his rifle around his shoulder and wraps his arm around her to guide her along. On the waterline, wind lashes at thinly trunked trees. They sway back and forth. Further up the bank, Marswell and Linda take a few steps, but she stumbles and falls. He picks her up and carries her in his arms. She drapes hers around his neck and drops her head onto his shoulder. As the wind buffets them, he carries her to the cabin. Stepping onto the porch, he sets her down. She slowly releases her hold, then pulls away from him. Linda rushes to her bedroom door. Marswell comes up behind her. She turns. He rips off her scarf, then wraps it around her neck. Her eyes linger on him, then she suddenly bolts into her room and shuts the door. Nearby, Kelly leans against the porch railing, smoking a cigarette, taking everything in. A veil of rain falls behind her as she turns her head, then glances back. Her green eyes glisten slightly. Later, she marches through the woods dressed in a dark slicker and rain hat. Pushing leafy branches aside, she steps through the trees and cringes sorrowfully. A little later, she steps up to the cabin. Marswell comes out to greet her.
You been out walking?
Sure.
You better be careful. Mrs. Norley very nearly got herself into trouble.
Did she?
Yes. She's under the delusion that she can wander off in the bush without being in any danger.
From the wild animals, you mean?
Certainly. What else?
Well, I don't know what happened out in the bush, but the lady seemed to be in a fair amount of danger right here on the porch.
You're seeing things, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
They go inside.
Hi, Brownie. Ooh, a party.
The dinner table's set.
It's the Nordys, their first night here, so I thought...
Oh, yeah.
He eyes Brownie's tux and darts out.
Good evening.
Feeling better? I just have to get my clothes changed. Be right with you.
Marswell tips his hat, then heads down the corridor.
Oh, Miss Kelly. This is my husband, Mr. Nordley.
Excuse me. Just, you know.
The Nordleys enter the main room.
Good evening.
Good evening.
You like a drink?
Good evening. Yes, thank you.
Who was the young girl?
Miss Kelly.
Honeybear. American.
In his room, Marswell eyes a brown-stained shirt. Later, he sits with the others in a jacket and tie.
Judging by your appetite, you must be quite well again.
I feel absolutely wonderful. And thanks to you, Dr. Marswell.
And you look it. And what's more, you've brought culture to Mr. Marswell's circus. I love the custom black tie in the middle of the jungle. Do you know that before you got here, we wore onion sacks? Anyone else wish to join me in a little more of the grape? Mrs. Nordley? It's very good for the nerves, they tell me.
No, thank you.
My nose?
No, thanks.
Oh, yes, that's right. I forgot. These animal-catching characters don't have very many nerves. Just one great big one.
You seem to have a real fondness for that wine, Miss Kelly.
Oh, any year, any model. They all bring out my better nature.
It was a pretty exciting afternoon. I can't tell you, Vic, how... You don't mind if it's Vic and Don from now on, do you?
Why not?
And Honeybear.
Oh, yes. I mean, the luck in your getting back in time to go after Linda. You know, old girl, you could easily have had a very bad mauling about.
Oh, yes, I hear you can get one any time in these parts. If you ask for it.
More coffee, Mrs. Norley?
No, thank you.
You must realize, darling, that even the smallest of creatures in Africa are voracious. I was reading only the other day of an incident of the Anoma Asan, the red driver ant.
It's a very tough insect.
Apparently, some poor blighter left his launch tied up at the riverbank, and along came an army of these ants and ate up everything except the engine.
Good heavens.
We have hundreds of different varieties of ants in this country.
Oh, yes, I saw quite a few ants this afternoon. But I guess they were just the old-fashioned kind, huh?
Marswell shares a look with Linda.
All through, I guess.
They all rise.
Why don't we have some music to soothe the savage breast?
Do you play, Miss Kelly?
No, but you can pump if you feel strong enough.
Oh, I see. It's one of those.
Yes.
Coming through the rye. That's a bit of home. Are you in good voice, Miss Kelly?
No, but I feel like singing.
Give forth, then.
Yes. When a body meets a body coming through the rye, if a body kiss a body, need a body cry.
She eyes Marswell and Linda on the other side of the room. Mrs. Nordley steps away. Marswell follows her to the open entrance.
Have I, but all alas, they smile at me when coming through the rye.
I say, that's absolutely delightful. I'm a frightfully reedy tenor, but I'll join you in the second verse.
Wonderful. Hey, Brownie, let's make it a trio.
Yes.
A bunch of wailing banshees,
right?
Huh?
Marswell and Linda head outside. Spotting them, Kelly blanches and stops for a moment.
They say, have I, that all the boys they smile at her when coming through the rye.
Marswell and Linda rejoin them.
I don't want to interrupt, but I thought you might want to know that if you're willing to start right away, I'd be glad to take you up into the gorilla country at that.
No, really? That's splendid.
Yes, provided neither of you have changed your minds.
Changed our minds? Do you hear that, Lynn, darling? Isn't it wonderful?
Yes. Yes, simply wonderful.
Well, I was thinking of that letter from Ringling Brothers. That was a nice price they offered for a pair of young ones. Besides, I haven't been up in the gorilla country in several years. Be a good change of that routine you were telling me about. And since our two young guests have it in their minds, well, we could kill several birds with one stone, to coin a phrase.
Kelly winces.
I think it's absolutely wonderful. You'll pardon my schoolboy enthusiasm, Miss Kelly, but you see, Vic was so stubborn about not taking us at first.
Oh, yes. Why, he's just an old quick change artist. But real quick. Do you know that one minute he can be just Trader Horn himself? And then suddenly everything goes black and, oops, out he comes dressed as Dr. Livingston. I presume.
Fortunate for us, I'd say.
Yeah. Nobody will be surprised but the gorillas.
Miss Kitty can come with us as far as the district officer at Keita.
Oh, don't worry about me, Brownie. I'll be quite all right. I'll sort of go into monastic retreat and realize how beautiful life really is.
Well, we close up shop here except for the boys looking after the animals. We'll have a 6 weeks wait or even longer. No, we'll take her as long as far as the district officer at Keener, and she can check out with his party.
Yes, I guess that could be arranged.
And in that case, she'll be on your plane for Cairo within a week or 10 days.
Fine. The sooner the better. To coin a phrase.
Later, Marswell sits alone in his room, his feet propped on the bed. Brownie enters.
I saw your light. I thought you weren't asleep yet. When do you plan to start?
Oh, we could be ready in about 2 days.
Full safari, I suppose. Entire complement of boys.
Naturally.
You know this is going to delay the Doggenbeck and the Chicago Zoo order.
We can fill it quick enough when we get back.
Brownie shoves Marswell's feet aside and sits across from him on the bed.
Wicklet. That's a nice couple. This is no good.
Marswell glares at him.
What are you talking about?
Oh, nothing. Getting old, I'm afraid. Good night.
Vic curiously stares after him. Daytime. Workmen load up several trucks. Marswell approaches with Kelly and Linda. They watch as a native man addresses a group of women.
Are they all Muntala's wives?
No, just six. The other three are cookies.
No kidding?
Yep, no kidding. Let's go.
Kelly knowingly eyes the group. As Marswell gets behind the wheel of the lead truck, Linda climbs in beside him. Kelly shoots a look at her back, then sits on her other side. The caravan starts to move up. Later, a cloud of dust clogs the air as they trudge down a dirt road. A tribe of sheep herders watches them go by. Later still, they pass through a marshland. Small bogs of water sit among ankle-high grasses. Several hippos lazily bathe in the largest pool. Along a savanna, a very distant herd of animals jogs past a single tree. Later, another group speeds near the road as the trucks pass. Inside the lead vehicle, Donald sits in back with Brownie.
Fascinating, eh, Lynn, darling?
It's amazing. Oh, look, what is that? Some sort of stork?
Secretary bird.
Secretary birds? Oh, what a prosaic name. Why do they call them that?
That's an unfair question. I haven't the slightest idea.
That secretary on the left has certainly got a pair of legs for the boss to drool over. She looks like she's been chased 5 laps around the desk and is now headed for the pay window.
Miss Kelly, we should certainly hate to lose you.
Oh, now, don't be greedy. Let the others speak for themselves.
Just what is our schedule?
Oh, it's down the same stretch for another 2 days until we reach the river here. There, the Bakuas will give us canoes and paddle boys. Then we proceed downriver till we reach Keener Station. At Keener Station, we contact Jackwood. He's the district officer of the Samburu Territory.
Ah, the Samburus. Those are the chaps I particularly want to visit.
And that, Mrs. Nordley, is where I leave you all. You all.
Marswell quickly eyes Linda.
No tears?
We'll give you a going-away party.
Thank you.
Where then? Then we'll proceed on foot to the Mountains of the Moon. Well, that's the beginning of the gorilla country.
Oh, look, what are those?
Leaping animals.
Impala.
Oh, it's simply exquisite creatures. Why, you'd think they had wings.
It's the Epicerus melampus suara. They can clear a 12-foot obstacle with a leap as long as 35, 40 feet.
Oh, you mustn't take the megaphone away from the driver. We're going to pass Grant's tomb any moment now. He'll tell you who's buried there.
I beg your pardon? There's a handsome animal for you, Mrs. Nordley. Thompson Gazelle.
Oh, lovely.
They dart past.
Who's the Mr. Thompson famous enough to have a gazelle named after him?
He's a third baseman. Hit a home run for the Giants once. Won the pennant.
Miss Kelly, we'll give you 2 going-away parties.
Well, now, I've got one for you. You see those zebras over there?
Is the equus virtually granted?
Well, to me, they're zebras. Anyhow, are they born white with black stripes or black with white stripes?
Well, actually, they're born black with... I'm going on, aren't I?
You know, Mrs. Nordley, this is quite a nice, bright husband you have.
information I'm already well aware of, Miss Kelly. But I assure you that outside of his niceness and his brightness, there are many other reasons why I'm in love with him.
Well, thank you, old girl.
I'd say he was a very lucky man.
As they exchange a look, Kelly lowers her gaze, then stares out the window with a sigh. Later, the trucks stand parked at a campsite. Kelly emerges from a tent, smoking a cigarette, and starts to wander. Natives watch over a campfire blazing nearby. She spots Marswell stooped beneath a broken, bent-over tree trunk. The hunter dunks his hands into a basin of water, then begins to soap off his arms. Kelly leans against one of the vehicles and watches him scrub vigorously. Looking up, he notices her. A tribesman with a patterned cloth wrapped around his waist hands Marswell a towel. Vic dries himself off, then tosses it back. Approaching Kelly, he runs his hand through his wet hair.
Better turn in early. We'll start at 5 in the morning, miss the heat. Oh, here.
He offers a pistol.
Hang on to this. It's loaded. All you have to do is pull the trigger.
Who do I point this at?
Leopards and lions have been known to come into tents.
She grins.
Thank you, Mr. Marswell. Actually, in light of recent development, there'll be no danger of my hitting you, will there?
Look, Kelly, don't. We know each other
well. Oh, never mind, Marswell. It was just a dumb crack that doubled right back on me. Boy, how stupid can a girl get?
Marswell strides to a tent. Inside, Linda sits on a cot as Vic pokes his head through the flaps.
Everything all right here? Anything you need?
Everything's just fine, thank you.
Good night, then.
Just a moment, will you please?
She steps out to face him.
For several days now, Miss Kelly's been making, well, at least insinuations.
I wouldn't let her upset me. She'll be leaving us at Kenya Station.
But what would give her the right to say things like that?
She saw us that day when we walked up on the porch.
Oh. You must forget that it ever happened. It was just, well, it was nothing.
You want me to forget it?
That's why you changed your mind about taking us on this trip, isn't it?
Plus the fact that you're not in love with your husband.
You mustn't say that.
Even though you said you were today in the car. And I know why you said it.
I said it because it's true. I am in love with Donald.
He looks her up and down.
You asked me why I never married. Maybe you yourself are the reason, Linda.
She stares, mouth slightly agape.
Linda!
Turning, she darts back inside the tent.
I'll see you in the morning.
Donald approaches.
Hello, Vic. I just won 15 shillings in a poker game. Meet my expenses.
Good.
Good night.
Good night.
As he walks off, Donald enters the tent.
Oh, I'm tired. Looks like the start of some exciting weeks, eh, darling? Lynn?
What? Of course, darling.
That Kelly girl is certainly a different type from any I've met. Wonderful sense of humor. I like her. And it's perfectly obvious, of course.
What is?
Well, there was a thing between her and Vic before we arrived. And now we are the villains. In some odd way, we've broken it up. Not that I blame her, of course. Vic's a devilishly attractive chap. Don't you think so? As a woman.
I suppose so.
All I know is, I'm glad you saw me first.
She pulls down mosquito netting between them.
Good night, darling.
Good night, Donald.
He dims a kerosene lamp. Moonlight shines on Linda's face as she gazes out the tent. Outside, Marswell takes a thoughtful drag and a cigarette. Linda steps out to watch him. Unaware, he flings his cigarette away and ambles off. Linda remains outside her tent, trailing him with her eyes. In her tent, Kelly lies on a cot, puffing her own cigarette. She blows smoke into the air, turns over, and stubs it out in an ashtray with a woeful expression. Then she blows out a candle beside her, flooding the tent with darkness. Kelly slowly leans back and rests her head on a pillow. Daytime. tribesmen adorned in shell necklaces beat on logs and boards. On a nearby dirt road, the caravan approaches. Holding staffs aloft, the muscular, bare-chested tribesmen begin to sway. A jeep leads the way, driven by Marswell with Linda at his side and a workman in the rear. Several trucks follow. They drive through a village of straw huts and come to a stop. A white priest, dressed in a collar and long robe, steps out of a bungalow with a thatched roof. Coming over to them, he waves.
Welcome, Victor!
Marswell and the others approach.
How are you, Victor?
Fine, Father.
Brownie, how do you do?
Hello, Father.
Father Joseph, this is Mr. and Mrs. Norley from England.
How do you do, Father?
Kelly turns toward a chapel of logs and bamboo. Draping a scarf around her head, she steps inside, crosses herself, and genuflects before the altar. Back outside.
Your music is wonderful, Father, although it did frighten me a little at first.
Well, it's hardly Catholic, but it's a song of welcome, and that's Christian. We're all just in time for lunch. Browning, you're not still on a diet, I hope.
Never, Father.
As they start inside, Vic glances over his shoulder. From inside the chapel, Kelly steps out and joins Marswell and the priest.
Miss Kelly, Father Joseph.
How do you do, Miss Kelly?
How do you do, Father?
You're just in time for lunch.
Later, they all sit at a small table.
And so, you good people are going to the gorilla country. Precarious animals. A friend of mine at Mission Preparatory, Father Balatsky, had his head torn from his body by one of them beasts.
That was carelessness, Father. You know that.
We're relying on Vic to see that we retain our heads.
I can't wait to see them in their natural habitat. The truest exemplary link between modern man and his primitive derivation.
Yes, I think you and I could have a lusty debate on the origin of man, Mr. Nordley.
I'm afraid you'd prove too rugged an opponent, Father.
By the way, I spoke to the chief, and you can have the canoes and the men. On the usual conditions.
Oh, no, not again.
I'm afraid so, Victor.
What are the conditions, eh? Is there any trouble?
Well, in order to get the men and the canoes to go into that strange country, the Bwana Kuba, the big chief, the party of the first part, to wit, our friend Victor, must undergo what is known as the ceremony of courage.
The ceremony of courage? I don't think I've heard of it. What is it, some sort of native custom?
Well, it's sort of like a game of darts.
He leaves the table. Later, they all watch as Marswell approaches a group of his workers.
Here, Marswell.
Stripped of his shirt, he tosses it to one of the men. Stepping before a thatched wall, he stands with fists at his hips. Linda shifts nervously. Two tribesmen dash toward Vic and hurl spears. One stabs the wall between Marswell's arm and his chest. The other sticks inches from his elbow. Victor extends his arms. Two more take their shot. The spears stick above his left arm. Two men rush forward. One spear sticks a foot from Marswell's hip, the other below his left hand. Two more men. Their spears stick several feet from his head. Kelly fidgets. A final man comes forward. His spear stabs the wall less than an inch from Vic's face. Father Joseph steps up. As Marswell steps away from the wall, Kelly comes over.
It's a fine way to run a railroad, Buster.
Oh, that's all right, Paul. All right, Kolchak, load the boat. Come on, we've got the canoes. Let's go.
Friend of me.
They head out. The tribesmen raise their spears in salute.
Father, I'd like to speak to you a moment when you have a chance.
Certainly, my daughter.
Later, the tribe carries staffs and instruments through the village. Nearby, Kelly approaches the priest, who now wears a Beretta cap. Taking it off, he leads her toward the bungalow. Kelly follows a few paces behind. Father Joseph enters and goes to a window. Kelly steps onto the porch, outside of the same window, and sits in a chair. Seated on the other side, he drops a bamboo blind between them. He places a black stole, embroidered with two crosses, around his neck, then nods his head. Kelly whispers to him between the slats. He listens intently. At the campsite, Linda starts to pack her things. Donald comes up behind her with a camera. Slender, he has brown, slick-backed hair and handsome features.
Darling.
She turns. He snaps her picture.
Well, darling, this is a jumping off pace. You want to go on or turn back?
What on earth makes you say that?
You're taking me seriously. I'd as soon turn back as...
She rubs her temple.
I said, do you feel all right?
I'm sorry. I'm just a bit edgy. I didn't sleep too well.
I know, it was an exciting evening. You take a sedative tonight. Get in the swing of things, darling. With the world the way it is, we may never have this chance again. Let's live every minute of it.
He tenderly squeezes her shoulders. Donning a pith helmet, he walks out. Linda turns back to her case and drops something inside it. Kelly approaches. She pauses outside the tent.
Good morning. Look, I know everybody's in a terrible rush this morning, but I thought perhaps we could have a few words together.
Yes?
Kelly enters.
I have been the champion of female Airedales, and I'd like to apologize.
What on earth for? I assure you, there's nothing.
Mrs. Nordley, I'm feeling a great deal better about life today. So let's level, shall we? I'm not blaming you by apologizing. I just like to tell you that, well, I know how it is with you and Vic. We girls are pretty smart about those things, aren't we?
Aren't you being rather presumptuous in assuming any...
Please, honey. Don't let me sit here with egg on my face. I came here to be your friend. And the only way I know how is to tell you that... Well, that I understand.
Can happen to a girl. He's a pretty attractive burglar and...
Really, if you'll excuse me, I must finish my packing. All right. I'll get out. But keep your head, will you? You know, you're sitting pretty. You're a lovely, attractive woman. You're married to a wonderful man.
Is it possible that all of this advice is based on the fact that you know Mr. Marswell just a little more intimately than I do?
Oh, my gosh, you are stuck, aren't you?
Once and for all...
You're jealous.
Shouldn't you examine your own emotions in that light?
Look, don't worry about me. I could be pea-green with jealousy and not hacked up any more than I am already. It's you we want to worry about. You know, this is no Sir Galahad who loves from afar. This is a two-legged boa constrictor.
I think you'd better leave.
All right. But remember, I came here to be your friend. For your sake. And I'm keeping the offer open.
She starts out.
It'll be rugged, but I'll keep it open.
Now, at the edge of a wide river, the tribe prepares canoes for launch. Brownie, Donald, and Linda look on with Marswell.
Watch it, Tahiti!
You go in the boat with Brownie. I'll take Mrs. Norley in the lead boat.
Right, Herman.
But wouldn't it be better if... Do you mind, darling?
Not at all.
That's just in case of emergency.
As they climb into the boats, Kelly runs toward them. Seated in the lead canoe, Linda sternly eyes her approach. Reaching the bank, Kelly climbs in beside her. The two women look away from each other. Marswell shakes the hands of tribesmen wearing feathered headdresses. The rest of the tribe lines the path leading to the shoreline. Marswell doffs his hat to them, then sits at the head of his canoe. He grips a rifle in his lap.
Twenty!
The four boats shove off. About a dozen oarsmen stand in the rear of each canoe, paddling strenuously. They flick the oars through the water with smooth, quick motions. Each has bulging biceps and a washboard belly. Linda turns to Kelly, who glances in the distance. Mrs. Nordley lowers her gaze. Upriver, a little later, the canoes slice through the water. On the bank, a herd of elephants trudges past. Donald takes their picture. Later, they pass hippos peeking out of the water. On the bank, crocodiles slither into the river. Keeping his eyes trained on them, Marswell cocks his rifle. Linda glances at the oarsmen behind her, then turns back toward Vic.
Are the men of this tribe also polygamous like Motala?
Only those who can afford more than one wife.
Seems hardly fair to take them away from their families.
I mean, the men are taking a chance?
Well, I... Yes, I'm quite sure that's what I mean.
No, you see, the natives have all sorts of devices to prevent their women from being stolen. In most tribes, there's a pre-marriage ordeal that practically guarantees fidelity.
Oh, really? What's that, pray?
Well, let's see if I can...
Linda! Look!
An elephant treads through the shallows.
Oh, isn't he beautiful? Perfect specimen.
Clean, too.
Just had his Saturday night bath.
Look!
On the bank, another waves his trunk high in the air.
Reminds me of somebody I know.
You were saying about this device for guaranteed fidelity. Why wouldn't it pass in the civilized world?
Well, primarily because you women would probably vote it down.
But why?
Well, because it's a means whereby a woman is rendered incapable of being unfaithful.
Oh, I think I understand.
Sorry to be so blunt about it.
No, really, it was my denseness. I should have realized.
Brother, I can take your cook's tour around the zoo. But when we get onto this metal striptease and wind up by hiding behind Louisa May Alcott, I'd want a powder.
Brownie, watch it. Hit ball.
One thrashes toward them. Kelly tumbles backward.
Oh!
Later, they glide up to a grassy bank. As Brownie peers through binoculars, Donald beams beside him.
Keener. Father Samburu. I'm terribly keen on seeing those chaps.
There doesn't appear to be a committee to welcome us.
Marswell steps ashore, followed by the others. Standing with Brownie, Kelly surveys the area.
Well, Brownie, looks like this is where I leave you.
He shakes no.
Well, I'm glad somebody's glum about it.
Rifle in hand, Marswell enters the deserted village. All of the huts appear empty. Lonely dirt paths lead into the horizon. Vic finds a spear resting in a dying fire. As he dips it into a jar of water, steam rises into the air. At the shore, one of the tribesmen cocks his ear, then beats on a log.
Brownie!
Brownie speeds toward Vic. A little later, the small party searches through the empty village. They pass a hut, its entryway barred with spears. Each of the men cradles a rifle. The group starts up steps toward a distant building. Large rocks line either side of the stone stairway. Suddenly, Marswell stops and glances behind them. Natives emerge from the huts, clenching spears. The Samburu stride toward the group with a purposeful gait. Tall, they have ebony-colored skin, tiny braids hanging to their shoulders and slender bills. Donald looks to Marswell, then nervously eyes this new tribe. They pause at the bottom of the stone steps. One of the men stands very still, the bright sun hitting his face. Decorative scars ring his cheeks. Another has crosses painted beneath his eyes. Linda and Kelly anxiously finger scarves. More and more tribesmen approach, each armed with a 6-foot-tall spear. The Samburu step forward, numbering in the hundreds. The tribe begins to jog closer and closer to the group with rhythmic dancing steps. The party looks to Marswell. He gestures for them to continue up the steps, then brings up the rear with Brownie. Behind them, flatlands stretch toward distant mountains. As the tribe continues to gather at the base of the steps, reaching the top, the small party approaches a cement building. A black man comes out. He wears a military jacket and kepi cap with a cloth flap at the back. He leads them inside, where a mustached man lies in bed, his shirt stained with blood. Marswell gently shakes him.
Jagwood.
Tom.
It's Vic. Vic Marswell.
Get your party out of here fast.
What happened?
Caught them ivory poaching. When the corporal was taking down the colors last night, they came at us.
Where are the rest of your men?
Got two of them out last night. It'll take several days before police reserves arrive. Get your party out quick. These two.
He points to two natives.
Good boys. Don't bother about me. I've had it.
Outside, the tribe raises their spears. A Samburu chieftain steps forward, draped in an orange cloth and cap. He holds a staff in the air and glares at Donald and Linda, who stand on the porch. Nordley glances around nervously. The two natives in military attire lead Jackwood out, flanking him. He rests one arm around each for support. The tribe jabs the air with their spears. They've gathered around each side of the stone stairway. Marswell leads the way as the group heads back down the steps, slowly walking through the tribe. Vic takes care not to make eye contact with them. The group follows his example. They reach the bottom of the steps, Marswell in front, followed by Jackwood and his men, Kelly and the Nordleys, and Brownie with two workmen in the rear. As they head through the village, the Samburu follow, lightly jogging behind. The group steps through a shanty. Marswell stops and glances back, keeping his rifle trained on the tribe. The Samburu pick up the pace and stomp closer to the retreating party. In the shanty, Marswell continues to stand guard, the only one left at the edge of the village. At the shoreline, Jackwood is helped into one of the canoes. It shoves off as the others begin to climb aboard the rest. Suddenly, the Samburu rush forward. Marswell sprints to the water's edge and hops into the last canoe. The Samburu charge, getting closer and closer. Vic digs his heels into the ground and pushes the boat off. Later, the party rows down the river. Later still, Kelly makes her way along a bank to the river's edge. She fetches a pail of water, then heads back to a campsite. One of Jackwood's men takes it from her. She spots Marswell approaching and turns away. Vic strides up to the Nordleys.
Well, there are guerrillas, all right. Three or four families in the next valley.
How do you know they'll stay there?
Well, I don't. These people are great trackers. We'll start out the first thing in the morning, right?
Thanks.
Nearby, Bolchak and one of Jackwood's men address a new tribe. Bolchak shakes a stick at them. Later, Kelly stands at the river's edge. Brownie approaches.
Good evening.
Oh, hi, Brownie. Sit down and join the picnic.
Smoking a pipe, he squats on a large boulder.
Miss Kelly. You know me well enough now to tell me about your scars.
It's nothing new, Brownie. Happens to lots of people. We'd just been married 3 weeks when Johnny had to sail. And then 2 months later, I got a telegram from the War Department telling me that he and his little P-51... you know, he had honey bear painted on the nose. Well, anyway, they both blew up in a million pieces somewhere over Berlin. But you know, Brownie, as short as it lasted, it was like being blessed for a lifetime.
So you hit the high spots and the gay beaches trying to forget him, eh?
Yeah. Great strength of character.
But you'd know it if you met it again. I say you'd know it if you met it again.
Yes, Brownie, I'd know it.
She steps away, gazing into the distance. At twilight, a leafless tree stands tilted, stretching toward the horizon. Vic and Linda stroll together as the sun sets behind them. She suddenly rushes forward and points.
Look!
Flamingos!
He cups his hands around his mouth.
Ah!
On the river, the distant flock scatters. Placing his hands on his hips, Marswell grins. Later, he leads Linda across the rocky summit of a waterfall. As water cascades from the shelf beneath their feet, they pause to survey the area. Linda holds her hands in the crook of his arm.
Gorilla.
What?
Gorilla country.
A mountain sits several miles off beneath a canopy of clouds. As Marswell takes a puff on his cigarette, Linda leans closer to him. He turns to face her. They gaze into each other's eyes for a long, lingering moment. Turning away, she steps toward the water. It rushes beneath her feet. Linda glances down for a moment, then slowly looks back. Marswell comes up beside her, pulls her into his arms, and presses his lips against hers. As he releases her, Linda searches his face. She starts to speak, then kisses him passionately. Stroking his shoulder, she rests her cheek against his chest. Nighttime. Linda raises the flap on her tent and tiptoes in. The mist behind her floats toward the indigo sky. Inside, Donald rests on a cot. He sits up, beaming a flashlight in her face. She jerks toward him.
It's nice up here, isn't it? Hi.
She darts behind mosquito netting.
Yes, it is nice for a change.
He rises and pushes the netting aside and comes up behind her. She eyes him, then jerks away.
I don't like mosquito netting. It separates people, doesn't it?
Donald, please.
She starts to undress.
Perhaps it's altitude, but I feel very lightheaded. Don't you feel in the least little bit lightheaded?
No, Donald, please.
Pulling out of his embrace, she drops onto a cot.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, darling. It's nothing. It's just that I'm terribly tired. That long climb today and... Oh, I don't know.
He shines the flashlight.
Now, darling, we've got a very early start in the morning. I don't know if I'll quite feel up to it. Donald, please turn that light off. It's shining straight in my eyes.
Right now.
He dims the light.
Lynn, darling. You're still my girl.
Don't be so childish.
That's good enough for me.
She walks out. He takes off his robe and climbs into bed. Daytime. The safari marches out, heading toward the mountain. As the men walk, Linda and Kelly sit in a covered wagon pulled by a long line of buffalo. Each animal has a coat of thin, dark fur and a sharp, curving horn on either side of its head. The group makes its way across the savanna, getting closer and closer to the mountain. Later, they have set up camp at the base of the rocky slope. Kelly stirs a pan of food beside a workman as Marswell approaches.
Kelly, why don't you come along? You might find gorillas interesting.
Gorillas. A month ago, I was buying a bra at Macy's, and now I'm studying gorillas yet. No, thank you. I'll stick around and help Mutala cook.
Mutala takes the pan.
What did he say?
Well, he says you can't even cook.
He follows the others. Kelly watches the group file toward the mountain. Later, they approach a forest. Later still, Vic, Linda, Donald, and Brownie wander through the woods. Several of the natives come up behind them. Marswell approaches Bolchak, who kneels toward the ground. The tracker rises.
Gorilla. Lots of them.
He nods to the right and starts in that direction. Marswell eyes the others, then ducks beneath a vine. They trail closely behind him. Brownie kneels, gazing off toward the right. The natives step past as Linda, Donald, and the workmen assemble a piece of equipment beside a tall fern. Marswell stands over them.
Is the battery ready, Matongi?
Yes.
They crouch beside a recorder with two reels of tape. Donald wears a set of headphones. Linda turns dials. The tape begins to run. A tribesman cups his hands around his mouth. Marswell starts, then steps deeper into the woods. Gripping his rifle, he carefully scans the area. Above, a small black gorilla clambers up a tree trunk, hand over hand. Marswell cocks his gun, then gestures to the others. Linda comes over with a microphone attached to a spear. Awestruck, her mouth drops open as she stares up at the ape. It joins a second youngster at the top of the tree. Marswell helps Linda straighten out the spear. She raises the microphone toward the animals. One of the apes climbs from one trunk to another. Linda turns to Vic.
I didn't know they could climb trees.
Only the young ones do.
Above, one beats its chest. Donald captures the sound on tape. Vic and Linda watch as several others join in. Perched high atop a tree, one gorilla reaches toward the sky. Below, Linda breaks into a bright smile. Suddenly, several natives rush past, heading out of the forest. One drops at Marswell's feet. He darts off.
Donald, camera.
Nordley comes over with a handheld camera.
You like to photograph a bull gorilla?
Yes, sir. Wonderful.
Brownie, cover us.
Brownie steps forward with his gun as the threesome heads deeper into the forest. In a small clearing, an adult male gorilla paces on all fours. He squats beside a family. Another adult brings over a fruit. As he sits, the male takes it. Shaggy black fur covers his entire body. His brow protrudes from his large head. He has tiny ears and small dark eyes. Nearby, Bolchek and Brownie keep watch. The male bites down on the fruit, breaking through its prickly skin. He starts to pick at it with his black leathery fingers. A baby gorilla approaches with another fruit. Nearby, an adult sits back against a cushion of green leaves. Bolchek darts his head toward the left as Marswell steps forward with Linda and Donald. The hunter leads them closer and closer to the gorillas. The male charges toward them. Linda grabs hold of Vic's neck. He flings her to the ground. The gorilla stops inches away. Linda bites down on her hand. Donald tries to back away.
Don't move back. Don't budge an inch. Hold still. He's trying to bluff us. Bring your camera up. Slowly.
Donald does. The ape bears his fangs. Donald starts to shoot. The gorilla rushes forward, shakes a plant, then steps back. Bolchek takes off, leaving the group. Brownie remains.
Brownie, watching.
Another male joins the first. They lurch forward, coming close to the group.
Watch the young bull. Got him.
Brownie stands straight as a wall, keeping his gun trained on the younger gorilla. Donald continues to film, only a few feet from the creatures. Sweat drips down his brow as the ape eyes him. The bull charges, then quickly backs away. Brownie keeps his aim tightly focused on the young male. The older male comes up, and the two start to inch forward again. Holding up a paw, the younger one glares at them. He comes right up to Donald. The camera trembles in his hand, but Nordley keeps filming. Linda cowers on the ground. The young bull shakes a plant only inches away. The young bull darts into the woods. The others get to their feet and slowly start to follow. Tears rim Linda's eyes as she stares after them. Marswell watches them go with a stone-faced expression. The gorillas trudge over a carpet of leaves and disappear into the forest. Their rounded humps sway with each step. Still gripping his rifle, Marswell's eyes flit to his left.
Brownie, there's the one we want to pick up tomorrow.
A baby about 2 feet tall, no larger than a toddler, trails after the others. As Brownie gazes after it, Marswell releases his rifle.
That's the last we'll see of them today. The boys can keep track of them tonight, and we'll bring up the nets tomorrow. Brownie!
Later in a clearing, Donald holds up tape reels.
This is the film and one of the reels. Will you take them back and keep them somewhere cool? Precious stuff.
Good. Do you think you got anything with that camera?
Well, I hope so, but I must admit I was pretty scared. Frightened to death.
You were scared? I'll never forget the first one I saw. Linda was all right, too.
You hear that, darling?
You're a strange beast, gorilla. You can bluff him sometimes, and then sometime... Well, we'll see tomorrow when we net him.
You think it's all right for me to stay up overnight and get some night sight?
Oh, of course. Not going to be very comfortable for Linda, though.
Donald goes over and drops beside her.
I didn't exactly want to get rid of you, darling, but you don't mind, do you?
No, of course not, Donald.
Vic approaches Brownie.
You stay up here with Donald, you mind?
Just as you say.
Keep whatever boys you want. Ball check?
I like my comforts in life, too.
Bolchek heads out. Marswell steps behind him. As Linda follows, Donald picks up his camera.
Darling.
She turns. He snaps her picture. She regards him for a long moment, then trails behind Vic. At the campsite, Kelly paces, her hands in her pants pockets. Bolchek approaches.
It's Kelly. If you're looking for Vic, he's taking a walk with Mrs. Nortley.
Turning away, she goes into a tent. Now, Marswell stands hand in hand with Linda, staring up at the moon. The sky, shot through with red and orange, is heavy with clouds. A stubby, leafless tree stands nearby. Vic draws her into an embrace. They kiss. Linda hugs him tightly, pressing her face into his shoulder, then pulls back.
Realize, don't you, that just from the way I can't stop myself looking at you, that everybody knows.
Everybody but Donald.
Times when I feel like it.
I know. And I feel it myself. Lee has to be told, that's all.
I don't know how to tell him. Oh, Vic.
They warmly hug.
You stay in camp tomorrow. I'm going up the hill.
He plants a kiss on her cheek, then draws back.
You understand?
She nods and mouths the word, yes. Later, they head back to the campsite holding hands. Linda pulls away from him and sprints toward her tent. Turning back, she waves a bright red scarf. Marswell ambles to a campfire and squats on a log before it. A column of smoke funnels into the air. Nearby, a lion stands at the edge of the forest. Clenching a cigarette between his lips, Marswell dips a stick into the fire, then brings its flaming tip to his cigarette. He lights it and blows out the flame. Taking a drag, he stares down at the ground, deep in thought. Kelly saunters over.
Hi. Mind if I join the marshmallow roast?
No, sit down.
Do you have a nice moonlight constitutional?
Very pleasant.
Pleasant, the man says. Well, now, at least that's gallantry.
He keeps his eyes focused on the fire.
Look, it's none of my business, but, you know, old Donzie boy's not such a bad shot. And he'd be well within his rights if he suddenly decided to take home a little trophy from this paper chase. As a matter of fact, you know, your head would look pretty decorative over his mantelpiece. You know, with your big ears stuck out like an elephant about to charge.
He throws the stick down.
Get off my back, Kelly. I'm in no mood for it.
You mean that?
He wipes his face.
Hey, Vic, look at me. This is no hit and run this time, is it? You're really in love.
You better go to bed.
Sitting beside him, she searches his face for a moment, then rises.
All right, I guess that's it. I don't know how you're going to solve this or what good's ever going to come of it. But whatever you do, Vic, I wish you all the happiness in the book.
He stands, flinging his cigarette into the fire, and steps up beside her. Vic wraps his arm around her and draws her close. Kelly rests her cheek against his shoulder and fingers the collar of his jacket.
Go on to bed, kid.
As he starts to let go, she rushes off. Marswell stares after her, then turns away. Stepping into her tent, Kelly takes out a handkerchief and blows her nose, then hurls it aside. Sitting before a small table, she starts to play solitaire.
Black King. What do I want with an old black king?
A spotted leopard creeps toward her.
Okay, let him go. He'll find out.
Little boy with a daisy air rifle. And gee, Dad, it was just my size.
It sneaks in and comes up right beside her. She glances at it and does a double take. The leopard eyes her, then turns away, padding out of the other side of the tent. Kelly slowly rises.
Oh.
Bringing her hand to her forehead, she collapses onto the cot. Daytime. Natives file through the savannah to the edge of the forest. They knock down a line of trees and start to cut others. Some hack at thick, leafy bushes with machetes. Nearby, a small family of gorillas strolls through the woods. The baby is with them. An adult grabs a spiny fruit and brushes off. The natives, carrying long wooden poles, trudge further into the forest. The gorillas watch several yards off. The natives start to string up 5-foot-tall netting and attach it to the poles. The apes quickly scurry away. Deeper into the woods, Marswell oversees their progress with Donald and the others.
Howdy. You and Bolchak check the nets on the other side.
Bolchak and Brownie head off. Marswell and Donald go in the other direction. A young bull charges forward. On the other side of the netting, a group of natives breaks into a run. In the woods, two babies step out from behind a plant. One nibbles a piece of fruit. Some of the natives grip spears, keeping their eyes on the adult gorillas. Marswell approaches the netting with Donald and tugs on it. He easily pulls it off one of the poles, then starts to rip it apart.
That's rotten.
Bolchak!
Marswell dashes up to Brownie and Bolchak.
That's falling apart back there. You know that, don't you?
A native hands Donald his camera as he strides after Marswell. Several others rush off as the two stop beside a fallen tree. Nearby, Bolchak repairs the torn net and ties it back to the pole. He eyes several natives further down the netting. Back at the log, Donald sets up his tape recorder.
You sure you still want to go through with this?
Oh, yes, certainly, Vic.
It might be a little dangerous, you know. The old ones are sure to charge the net when they... Brownie's around there trying to rope a young one for you. Now, Donald.
Yes, Vic?
I want to talk to you.
Just a minute, Vic.
Donald stakes a spear into the ground with a microphone atop. Studying him, Marswell strikes a match and lights a cigarette. He blows out the match as Donald brings the microphone cord back to the machine and attaches it. While he starts to wind the tape along the reels, Vic digs into his pocket and takes out another cigarette.
Cigarette?
Yes, thanks.
We might as well make ourselves comfortable. This thing may take 5 minutes and may take an hour. It depends on the disposition. We can sit here and talk.
Good. We haven't had much opportunity. You know, when I admire a fellow, I always like to get to know him better. Exchange points of view and all that.
Yes, I like to have everything above board, too.
I'm glad to have this opportunity of saying that I think that everything's been handled simply magnificently.
Well, things haven't gone off exactly like they might have, but...
No, truly, this will always be one of the most memorable experiences of my life. It's only that... Well, I am disappointed for Linda's sake, that's all.
What about Linda?
Her not coming up today. Not feeling up to it and all. I realize now that much as I enjoy this sort of thing, you know, field trips, roughing it, so to speak, it's not for Linda at all.
Well, she wanted to come up, but I told her that...
Oh, yes, I know. She's been wonderful. Making a pretense at enjoying it. But that's for my sake, you know. She's been so moody of late. Almost irritable once or twice. And believe me, Vic, that's not like Linda at all. Funny, night before last, she even forgot it was our wedding anniversary. That's usually the husband's blunder, you know. No, these trips aren't for Linda. I suppose it's home and Devonshire from now on. Raising that family sooner than I expected.
Marswell looks away.
Forgive me if I tell you how much I'm in love with her.
Marswell coolly regards him for a moment, then hurls his cigarette away.
I have to forgive you for that.
No, seriously, Vic. It's been great to become friends with a fellow like you. We're so different, you see. I imagine you've had to grub and sweat, even for every penny you've made and everything you wanted to build. Me? Oh, I'm one of those silver spoon chaps, I suppose. I've been spouting a whole autobiography. Tell me something about yourself. To begin with, if I'm not too beastly inquisitive, Linda and I have always wondered why an attractive chap like you has never got himself a wife.
Vic's jaw tenses. He glances down, stroking his wrist, then eyes Donald.
I've been too busy collecting animals. Looks like he's coming out now. Stop talking and watch what you came for.
As Donald adjusts the mic attached to the spear, Marswell goes over to the net. Holding up his rifle, Vic gazes into the distance. A bull charges toward the net. On the other side, a few natives clutch spears, standing guard. Sweat drips down the side of one's face. Two young gorillas rush up. A native points his spear at the animal. An adult ape bares its fangs. A bearded native stares it down with a stone-faced look. The gorilla backs away. A skinny man stands with his weapon slung over his shoulder. A bull holds up a trembling hand, then suddenly stampedes toward Donald. Nordley drops his camera. Marswell points and shoots, hitting the gorilla square in the chest. The ape drops to the ground. As the gun smoke clears, Vic goes over to the animal. He steps past vines and stares down at the limp, furry body. Donald comes up behind him. He eyes the gorilla's bloody chest wound.
Vic, you certainly saved my life.
You didn't think I planned it, did you? The last thing I wanted to do was knock him over.
No, of course not.
Let's stop the chatter for a while.
As he turns away, Brownie approaches.
Sorry, Vic, the little one got away.
Never mind. Tell Balchak to stay up here. Donald will want to examine the gorilla.
He marches off.
Balchak?
Nighttime. Balchak comes up to Donald.
Fine gorilla. Very fine specimen. I'd say weight close up to 700 pounds.
I say, Balchak. Have you any idea why Vic stalked off like that? Going back to camp with hardly a word?
I'd say he had a very good reason for hurrying back to camp. Yeah, some more.
He pours wine.
I must have said something to upset him.
If you don't know the reason, I'd begin to find out if I were you.
What do you mean by that?
Balchak nudges him slightly.
Mr. Nordley, if I had a wife as pretty as yours, I'd find out fast enough.
Donald throws his drink at him.
Well, Mr. Nordley. Oh, Mr. Nordley.
Back at the campsite, Marswell enters his tent. Behind him, Brownie parts the mosquito netting and eyes him. Opening a small cabinet, Vic pulls out a bottle.
We'll go back to the canoes the first thing in the morning. Get an early start. Everything goes.
As he uncorks the bottle, Brownie turns away. Vic grabs a cup and fills it. He drops onto a cot, throws back his head, and chugs the wine down. Kelly approaches and steps into the tent.
Where is everybody?
Still up there.
Did you get the baby gorillas?
Everything fouled up.
You know, you don't look much like a bridegroom who cometh forth from his chamber and rejoiceth. You don't look so hot.
I don't feel so hot.
You got left on third, Herr Marcy.
Didn't even go to bat.
You couldn't tell him, huh?
He eyes her with a squint.
No.
You went noble.
I went yellow.
You went noble.
He gulps down more wine.
How do you plan to break the news down the street?
I'll think of some way.
That's just the way to keep you clear-headed, of course.
Sometimes it gets you nasty enough to get a nasty job done.
Well, then don't be so stingy with your nastiness, partner. Come here. Let's have a drink.
She sits beside him.
Like I've always said, Kelly, you're all right.
Here's to your noble nastiness.
Cold, Kelly.
Drink up. To the victor belongs the spoiled herring. Victor, that's you, Vic. Joke. Laugh.
Yes, sir, you're all right, Kelly.
Oh, you said that before, but I love it. Don't worry, Vic. I'm not trying to crawl back into green pastures. Poor old Mozzie. Got himself all tangled up in one of his necks. Like a gorilla, and he doesn't know how to get out.
She falls into his lap and wraps her arms around him. Linda enters, her eyes widen in shock.
Well, if you two will excuse me, I think I shall retire.
As she stands, Vic eyes Linda.
No, don't. There's plenty in the bottle yet. More where that came from. Plenty for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Come on in, Linda. Join the party. What are you so surprised about? You always sort of guessed that Kelly and I were old friends, didn't you? It's all right for old friends to have a drink, isn't it?
What are you saying? You're drunk.
Certainly I'm drunk. But I certainly know what I'm saying. Listen, Mrs. M, you're not going to tell me that you've been taking all this seriously, are you? You know how it is on safari. It's in all the books. The woman always falls for the white hunter, and we guys make the most of it. Do you blame us? Well, when you come along with that look in your eye, and the guy in the whole world...
She grabs a gun. Linda shoots him in the upper arm, then collapses onto the cot. Marswell holds his wounded arm as the others rush into the tent. Donald goes over to his wife.
Linda!
Oh, no.
What's been going on?
Well, I'm glad you came in. This big Congo Casanova's been after your wife ever since she's been here. And she's been sport enough to hold him off and not even tell you about it so as not to spoil your fun. Well, tonight he got her over here on the pretext... Well, he was pretty drunk. So when I came tearing over here to help, well, he was getting pretty bad, so she shot him as any decent woman would do.
Good going, Donald.
Beat it.
Kelly heaves a sigh of relief as Donald guides Linda out.
If she hadn't, I'd have done it myself.
As they leave, Kelly opens the medical kit.
Oh, now, are you going to stand there and bleed to death?
Now, just grease the skin. How'd you go losing your head? You've done pretty well up to now.
Losing my head? Fine thing.
Oh, stop talking. Put some bandage around me.
Well, then stop yelling at me. Too bad you didn't teach her to shoot a little straighter. African gorillas, lions. The only lions I ever want to see again are the two in front of the public library.
She struggles to wrap his arm, then suddenly takes off. Daytime. The Nordleys approach the canoes where Brownie waits.
Well, we're ready to shove off now. Darling.
Donald snaps Linda's picture. He holds his arm around her waist as they head for the canoes. Brownie goes over to Kelly, who gazes over her shoulder.
You can get into the boat now.
Thank you, Brownie.
Are you sure you're ready to go?
Quite sure.
They turn to the boats.
Hey, Yadi Mishua!
Kelly!
Yeah.
Marswell approaches and strides right up to her.
Now that you're leaving, how about saying goodbye?
Okay. Goodbye.
She offers her hand. He shakes it.
Look, I'm going to stay up there for a while, try and pick up a couple of baby gorillas. Make the trip pay for itself. How about you sticking around?
What for?
Well, I thought that maybe...
Oh, no. You and nobody else is going to wring me out and hang me up to dry again.
Well, how about it? As soon as I'm through up there, we could head back and stop by Father Joseph's. Would you like that?
She gazes into his eyes.
You mean you're going to make an honest woman out of me?
It suits me, Kelly.
It suits you! Listen, Buster, you and your quick change acts aren't going to hang orange blossoms all over me because you feel the cold weather coming on. No, thank you.
I'll go back where I can be honest without getting kicked around for it. I'll see you.
Wendy!
She climbs into a canoe. The oarsmen shove off. As the boats slip across the water, Kelly wipes away a tear. Marswell strolls along the bank, trailing them.
I can't hear you.
I said take good care of her.
Shaking her head, Kelly mouths the word, you. She gazes into the distance, then back to the shore. Vic beams at her. Kelly's eyes widen with a dawning realization. She flashes a smile, jumps over the side of the canoe, and wades toward the bank. Brownie watches with a small grin. Marswell helps her out of the river. Hand in hand, they stagger ashore and passionately embrace. Fade to black. A title appears, Mogambo, The End. Cast includes Clark Gable as Victor Marswell, Ava Gardner as Eloise Kelly, Grace Kelly as Linda Nordley, Donald Sinden as Donald Nordley, Philip Stainton as John Brown Price, Lawrence Naismith as the skipper, Dennis O'Day as Father Joseph.